The Longer Discourse on Emptiness, translated by Bhikkhu Sujato. So I have heard. At one time the Buddha was staying in the land of the Sakyans, near Kapilavastu in the Banyan Tree Monastery. Then the Buddha robed up in the morning and, taking his bowl and robe, entered Kapilavastu for alms. He wandered for alms in Kapilavastu. After the meal, on his return from alms round, he went to the dwelling of Kalakamaka the Sakyan for the day's meditation. Now at that time, several resting places had been spread out at Kalakamaka's dwelling. The Buddha saw this and wondered, "Several resting places have been spread out. Are there several mendicants living here?" Now at that time, Venerable Ananda, together with several other mendicants, was making robes in Gata the Sakyan's dwelling. Then, in the late afternoon, the Buddha came out of retreat and went to Gata's dwelling, where he sat on the seat spread out and said to Venerable Ananda, "Several resting places have been spread out at Kalakamaka's dwelling. Are several mendicants living there?" "Indeed there are, sir. It's currently the time for making robes." "Ananda, a mendicant doesn't shine who enjoys company and groups, who loves them and likes to enjoy them. It's simply not possible that such a mendicant will get the pleasure of renunciation, the pleasure of seclusion, the pleasure of peace, the pleasure of awakening when they want, without trouble or difficulty. But you should expect that a mendicant who lives alone, withdrawn from the group, will get the pleasure of renunciation, the pleasure of seclusion, the pleasure of peace, the pleasure of awakening when they want, without trouble or difficulty. That is possible." "Indeed, Ananda, it is not possible that a mendicant who enjoys company will enter and remain in the freedom of heart, either that which is temporary and pleasant, or that which is irreversible and unshakable. But it is possible that a mendicant who lives alone, withdrawn from the group, will enter and remain in the freedom of heart, either that which is temporary and pleasant, or that which is irreversible and unshakable." "Ananda, I do not see even a single sight which, with its decay and perishing, would not give rise to sorrow, lamentation, pain, sadness, and distress in someone who has desire and lust for it. But the realized one woke up to this meditation, namely to enter and remain in emptiness internally by not focusing on any signs. Now suppose that while the realized one is practicing this meditation, monks, nuns, laymen, laywomen, rulers and their ministers, founders of religious sects, and their disciples go to visit him. In that case, with a mind slanting, sloping, and inclining to seclusion, withdrawn and loving renunciation, he invariably gives each of them a talk, emphasizing the topic of dismissal. Therefore, if a mendicant might wish, 'May I enter and remain in emptiness internally,' so they should still, settle, unify, and immerse their mind in samadhi internally. And how does a mendicant still, settle, unify, and immerse their mind in samadhi internally? It's when a mendicant, quite secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unskillful qualities, enters and remains in the first absorption, second absorption, third absorption, fourth absorption. That's how a mendicant stills, settles, unifies, and immerses their mind in samadhi internally. They focus on emptiness internally, but their mind isn't eager, confident, settled, and decided. In that case, they understand, 'I am focusing on emptiness internally, but my mind isn't eager, confident, settled, and decided.' In this way, they are aware of the situation. They focus on emptiness externally, but their mind isn't eager, confident, settled, and decided. They focus on emptiness internally and externally, but their mind isn't eager, confident, settled, and decided. They focus on the imperturbable, but their mind isn't eager, confident, settled, and decided. In that case, they understand, 'I am focusing on the imperturbable internally, but my mind isn't eager, confident, settled, and decided. In this way, they are aware of the situation. Then that mendicant should still settle, unify, and immerse their mind in samadhi internally, using the same meditation subject as a basis of immersion that they used before. They focus on emptiness internally, and their mind is eager, confident, settled, and decided. In that case, they understand, I am focusing on emptiness internally, and my mind is eager, confident, settled, and decided. In this way, they are aware of the situation. They focus on emptiness externally, and their mind is eager, confident, settled, and decided. They focus on emptiness internally and externally, and their mind is eager, confident, settled, and decided. They focus on the imperturbable, and their mind is eager, confident, settled, and decided. In that case, they understand, I am focusing on the imperturbable, and my mind is eager, confident, settled, and decided. In this way, they are aware of the situation. While a mendicant is practicing such meditation, if their mind inclines to walking, they walk, thinking, while I'm walking, bad, unskillful qualities of desire and aversion will not overwhelm me. In this way, they are aware of the situation. While a mendicant is practicing such meditation, if their mind inclines to standing, they stand, thinking, while I'm standing, bad, unskillful qualities of desire and aversion will not overwhelm me. In this way, they are aware of the situation. While a mendicant is practicing such meditation, if their mind inclines to sitting, they sit, thinking, while I'm sitting, bad, unskillful qualities of desire and aversion will not overwhelm me. In this way, they are aware of the situation. While a mendicant is practicing such meditation, if their mind inclines to lying down, they lie down, thinking, while I'm lying down, bad, unskillful qualities of desire and aversion will not overwhelm me. In this way, they are aware of the situation. While a mendicant is practicing such meditation, if their mind inclines to talking, they think, I will not engage in the kind of speech that is low, crude, ordinary, ignoble, and pointless. Such speech doesn't lead to disillusionment, dispassion, cessation, peace, insight, awakening, and extinguishment. Namely, talk about kings, bandits, and ministers, talk about armies, threats, and wars, talk about food, drink, clothes, and beds, talk about garlands and fragrances, talk about families, vehicles, villages, towns, cities, and countries, talk about women and heroes, street talk and well talk, talk about the departed, motley talk, tales of land and sea, and talk about being reborn in this or that state of existence. In this way, they are aware of the situation, but I will engage in speech about self-effacement that helps open the heart and leads solely to disillusionment, dispassion, cessation, peace, insight, awakening, and extinguishment. That is, talk about fewness of wishes, contentment, seclusion, aloofness, arousing energy, ethics, immersion, wisdom, freedom, and the knowledge and vision of freedom. In this way, they are aware of the situation. While a mendicant is practicing such meditation, if their mind inclines to thinking, they think, I will not think the kind of thought that is low, crude, ordinary, ignoble, and pointless. Such thoughts don't lead to disillusionment, dispassion, cessation, peace, insight, awakening, and extinguishment. That is, sensual, malicious, or cruel thoughts. In this way, they are aware of the situation. But I will think the kind of thought that is noble and emancipating, and brings one who practices it to the complete ending of suffering. That is, thoughts of renunciation, goodwill, and harmlessness. In this way, they are aware of the situation. There are these five kinds of sensual stimulation. What five? Sights known by the eye that are likeable, desirable, agreeable, pleasant, sensual, and arousing. Sounds known by the ear that are likeable, desirable, agreeable, pleasant, sensual, and arousing. Smells known by the nose that are likeable, desirable, agreeable, pleasant, sensual, and arousing. Tastes known by the tongue that are likeable, desirable, agreeable, pleasant, sensual, and arousing. Touches known by the body that are likeable, desirable, agreeable, pleasant, sensual, and arousing. These are the five kinds of sensual stimulation. So you should regularly check your own mind. Does my mind take an interest in any of these five kinds of sensual stimulation? Suppose that, upon checking, a mendicant knows this: my mind does take an interest. In that case, they understand, I have not given up desire and greed for the five kinds of sensual stimulation. In this way, they are aware of the situation. But suppose that, upon checking, a mendicant knows this: my mind does not take an interest. In that case, they understand, I have given up desire and greed for the five kinds of sensual stimulation. In this way, they are aware of the situation. A mendicant should meditate, observing rise and fall in these five grasping aggregates. Such is form, such is the origin of form, such is the ending of form. Such is feeling, such is the origin of feeling, such is the ending of feeling. Such is perception, such is the origin of perception, such is the ending of perception. Such are choices, such is the origin of choices, such is the ending of choices. Such is consciousness, such is the origin of consciousness, such is the ending of consciousness. As they do so, they give up the conceit, I am, regarding the five grasping aggregates. In that case, they understand, I have given up the conceit, I am, regarding the five grasping aggregates. In this way, they are aware of the situation. These principles are entirely skillful, with skillful outcomes. They are noble, transcendent, and inaccessible to the wicked one. What do you think, Ananda? For what reason would a disciple value following the teacher, even if sent away? Our teachings are rooted in the Buddha. He is our guide and our refuge. Sir, may the Buddha himself please clarify the meaning of this. The mendicants will listen and remember it. A disciple should not value following the teacher for the sake of statements, songs, or discussions. Why is that? Because for a long time you have learned the teachings, remembering them, reciting them, mentally scrutinizing them, and understanding them with right view. But a disciple should value following the teacher, even if asked to go away, for the sake of talk about self-effacement that helps open the heart and leads solely to disillusionment, dispassion, cessation, peace, insight, awakening, and extinguishment. That is, talk about fewness of wishes, contentment, seclusion, aloofness, arousing energy, ethics, immersion, wisdom, freedom, and the knowledge and vision of freedom. This being so, Ananda, there is a peril for the teacher, a peril for the student, and a peril for the spiritual practitioner. And how is there a peril for the teacher? It's when some teacher frequents a secluded lodging, a wilderness, the root of a tree, a hill, a ravine, a mountain cave, a charnel ground, a forest, the open air, a heap of straw. While meditating withdrawn, they're visited by a stream of Brahmins and householders of the city and country. When this happens, they enjoy infatuation, fall into greed, and return to indulgence. This teacher is said to be imperiled by the teacher's peril. They're ruined by bad, unskillful qualities that are corrupted, leading to future lives, hurtful, resulting in suffering and future rebirth, old age and death. That's how there is a peril for the teacher. And how is there a peril for the student? It's when the student of a teacher, emulating their teacher's fostering of seclusion, frequents a secluded lodging, a wilderness, the root of a tree, a hill, a ravine, a mountain cave, a charnel ground, a forest, the open air, a heap of straw. While meditating withdrawn, they're visited by a stream of Brahmins and householders of the city and country. When this happens, they enjoy infatuation, fall into greed and return to indulgence. This student is said to be imperiled by the student's peril. They're ruined by bad, unskillful qualities that are corrupted, leading to future lives, hurtful, resulting in suffering and future rebirth, old age and death. That's how there is a peril for the student. And how is there a peril for a spiritual practitioner? It's when a realized one arises in the world, perfected, a fully awakened Buddha, accomplished in knowledge and conduct, holy, knower of the world, supreme guide for those who wish to train, teacher of gods and humans, awakened, blessed. He frequents a secluded lodging, a wilderness, the root of a tree, a hill, a ravine, a mountain cave, a charnel ground, a forest, the open air, a heap of straw. While meditating withdrawn, he's visited by a stream of Brahmins and householders of the city and country. When this happens, he doesn't enjoy infatuation, fall into greed and return to indulgence. But a disciple of this teacher, emulating their teacher's fostering of seclusion, frequents a secluded lodging, a wilderness, the root of a tree, a hill, a ravine, a mountain cave, a charnel ground, a forest, the open air, a heap of straw. While meditating withdrawn, they're visited by a stream of Brahmins and householders of the city and country. When this happens, they enjoy infatuation, fall into greed, and return to indulgence. This spiritual practitioner is said to be imperiled by the spiritual practitioner's peril. They're ruined by bad, unskillful qualities that are corrupted, leading to future lives, hurtful, resulting in suffering and future rebirth, old age and death. That's how there is a peril for the spiritual practitioner. And in this context, Ananda, as compared to the peril of the teacher or the student, the peril of the spiritual practitioner has more painful, bitter results, and even leads to the underworld. So, Ananda, treat me as a friend, not as an enemy. That will be for your lasting welfare and happiness. And how do disciples treat their teacher as an enemy, not a friend? It's when the teacher teaches the Dhamma out of kindness and compassion. This is for your welfare, this is for your happiness. But their disciples don't want to listen. They don't pay attention or apply their minds to understand. They proceed having turned away from the teacher's instruction. That's how the disciples treat their teacher as an enemy, not a friend. And how do disciples treat their teacher as a friend, not an enemy? It's when the teacher teaches the Dhamma out of kindness and compassion, this is for your welfare, this is for your happiness, and their disciples want to listen. They pay attention and apply their minds to understand. They don't proceed having turned away from the teacher's instruction. That's how the disciples treat their teacher as a friend, not an enemy. So, Ananda, treat me as a friend, not as an enemy. That will be for your lasting welfare and happiness. I shall not mollycoddle you like a potter with their damp, unfired pots. I shall speak, pushing you again and again, pressing you again and again. The core will stand the test. That is what the Buddha said. Satisfied, Venerable Ananda was happy with what the Buddha said.